My name is Christy. I'm 73 years old. Today's date is the 20th of March. I'm in Saratoga Springs, New York, and I'm here with my one small step partner, Alan.
And my name is Alan. I am 66 years old. Today's date is March 20th, 2023. I'm in Richmond, Virginia, and I'm here with my one small step partner, Christy.
Born in Norfolk, married and living in the Richmond area for over 35 years, lifelong Virginian, parent, homeowner, involved in the radio industry for over 30 years and still working, pet owner, firearms enthusiast and instructor, college graduate, American history nut, birdwatcher, and politically active.
And Christy's bio, she's retired from 25 years working with trauma survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. She's active in her liberal Christian faith community, although she considers herself to be agnostic. She's married with stepchildren, step-grandchildren, multiple rescue dogs, two at the moment. And she's the last one alive in her family of origin. She's concerned about human rights, children and animal welfare, education, affordable housing, and available health care.
Why did you want to participate, Alan, in One Small Step?
I see our nation as becoming fractured. People are intolerant of one another, and it's mostly because they do not take the time to meet other people, to learn about each other. And I saw this as a good opportunity to make one small step in that right direction. Christy, why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
Very similar feelings to yours. I'm surprised at the degree of enmity I hear even among neighbors in a neighborhood where I didn't expect it. And it's upsetting. So this seemed like a wonderful personal way to get to meet someone different than myself and see what they were like.
Which one of us jumps first?
Are we taking turns? No. Okay.
Now you can. Okay. Now you're free to discuss whatever you want.
Ask whatever question.
Okay. Alan, what people or events have most influenced your political beliefs?
I'm not sure if I can blame it on anybody or any particular set of events. I have witness things that have led me to believe in a particular way and to try and push that political agenda. But I can't say that there's specific events or specific people. There's certainly some that I have admired along the way. I was a great fan of Ronald Reagan because I felt like most of the time he was speaking the truth. And there's not much of that. Have you similar views or stumbles that have led you to where you are?
Yeah, I'll blame it on my parents. Very briefly, they were a mixed marriage. My dad was Catholic and my mother was Protestant. And there was a lot of, and my dad was going to take orders as a Jesuit and then met my mother. So there was a lot of between the families, there was a lot between my parents, but there was also a huge amount of conversation all the time at the table. And my dad would say things like, okay, now switch sides. You know, we'd read an editorial and he would say, okay, now switch sides, defend the other side, which as a teenager, I found incredibly annoying. But in retrospect, he was probably righter than I thought at the time. And then as I got older and moved out in the world, I found that people were not all so comfortable looking at both sides of things.
That's frequently the case. I find to truly understand an argument, you have to be able to clarify either side of it and speak their viewpoint accurately. I endeavor to do that.
I am curious if the radio part comes into that for you.
Perhaps. I've been involved in it, but I've usually been on the technical side. I've been in radio engineering for the last 20 years or so. I did spend some time operating a studio prior to that, but I keep the wires twisted together these days and drive about 1,000 miles a week between many transmitter sites and keep them all going. What would be your greatest feeling about somebody misunderstanding you and your positions politically?
I think, so I swing between feeling badly that I haven't said it well, because I like to think I'm articulate, but I have moments, many of them. I sometimes hurt. Honestly, particularly in the neighborhood with some neighbors that I didn't expect the kind of assumptions they were making about me, and trying to figure out how to best resolve it without their having to be different or my having to be different, but yeah. Oh, I like this one. What about your own political side causes you discomfort?
The anger. I understand where much of it is coming from, but I don't feel like it will allow things to move forward. It won't allow the sort of change that my political side would like to see, because I think the anger gets in the way. And if all you were doing is spouting anger, nobody's listening to you. And it's very hard to influence an argument when nobody's listening.
I don't know that I feel exactly that way about what I would perceive as my side, although I struggle with, again, not to go through the list of things that are important to me, but, you know, we've got lots of homeless people. We have lots of children hungry. We have all of those things. And I often think that the attention is put on a more, I'm not sure elitist is the word I ought to use, but I don't feel like my party is as down in the weeds as I would like them to be. And some of that is because I've worked in the weeds and I know what it's like. And so my struggle is, even locally, because I'm active in local politics, how to get people to kind of get that. I'd like them to be more down to earth.
I think that could be beneficial on both sides.
Yeah.
Do you go ahead.
I was going to ask you a personal question. I know so few people who live in the same state where they grew up. So I was wondering how that happened.
I guess I would say just lucky. I find Virginia to be a wonderful place to live. We have mountains, we have seashores. Most anything you would want to do is available here. It's temperate enough that the summers are hot and the winters are cold enough you need to wear a coat, but you don't usually suffer several weeks in a row of being frozen in. I went out of the state for school and have just always had no particular reason to move anywhere, so here I am. The greatest move of my life was when I got married and moved up here to the Richmond area. So
I have good friends who lived in Richmond for a long time and loved it. So I was just curious. I have moved a lot. I have lived in disparate places. which worked for me. I'm not sure what worked for most people, but it worked well for me. I've been here for almost 30 years and I like it, but I don't know that this will be my last stop. Although, given that I'm getting closer to the end than not, it may be close to the last stop. Yeah.
We all might have more future than we expect. Who knows?
What was life like for you growing up?
The third child of three. I have two older brothers that are still with us. The kids in my family came about 4 years of separation apart. So my oldest brother's 8 years older than I am, and my middle one is 4 years older than I am. I inherited the bedroom when somebody finally moved out. But I had an amazing place to grow up. I grew up in Norfolk, and our family property was on a body of water that connected eventually to the Chesapeake Bay. And that was an amazing place to grow up. I had all kinds of wildlife, fishing, crabbing, all kinds of activities, rowing boats, power boats, but smaller ones, not anything, you know. We couldn't tow skiers or anything like that. We could simply get out to the bay faster with a motor. But it was an amazing place to grow up, and I spent an awful lot of time outdoors. What was it for you?
Well, when I was born, my mother and I lived in Manhattan. Very different. The person who would raise me as my father came into my life at five. He was around, but he was actually sort of formally in my life at five. They proceeded to have three more kids 2 years apart. And then we moved when I was 12 to a place on Long Island Sound. And similar to your experience, it was incredible. I mean, I was a city kid, so it was a little bit of a shock for a while. I was a real city kid by then. But you know, I took to clamming and fishing and eeling and mussling pretty easily, and spent an enormous amount of time at the beach, in the water. And we lived at the bottom of a hill with huge woods behind us that eventually got developed, but not until after I'd left home. So we had rock forts and tree forts, and I don't know that it was idyllic, but it certainly was free. You know, I don't remember ever being afraid, even coming home at 11 at night from my best friend's house, who lived on the other side of that big hill. And I think it is different now for kids, and I wish there was a way for them to have that, there's a way to share that.
Yeah. Yeah, our nearest neighbor straight back was over a quarter mile away and across a great deal of swamp, which you couldn't get there except by boat. Driving would take you about 25 minutes to get to the place you could see on the other side. But it was quite the amazing place. And one of the reasons I guess I'm still a bird watcher today is I got exposed to many kinds of waterfowl.
So tell me about your bird watching. I'm a slow birder. I am, so.
Well, we have tried to keep bird feeders for years so that the birds we'd like to attract are here. We're particularly fond of our woodpeckers, of which we have about four different kinds that frequent our yard with some regularity. It just kind of brightens your day. You look out and you see a bluebird, or you look out and you see a chickadee, or you look out and see a tufted titmouse. They're cute little birds, and some of them have gotten so tame that I can practically be filling the feeder and they'll be trying to land on me. It's startling. Every once in a while I'll be working on something in the feeder and I'll hear something, and it's like there's a bird right behind my head. But they're used to me, so.
My goldfinches are like that. And we currently have three poles and six feeders and a couple of suet cakes. So it's like you, we have woodpeckers and one pileated who comes infrequently, but is very impressive. And I have a heated bird bath because in upstate New York, I wouldn't see a bird in the winter. My goodness.
Unless they come equipped with ice skates.
So, you know, it keeps it from freezing. And every morning I add warm water. And so almost every day, unless it's overcast, I have, you know, half a dozen doves and even bluebirds at this time of year, which up here is pretty unusual. And everything in between, lots of cardinals. Yeah. My husband was not a birder and now spends a huge amount of time sitting at the kitchen window just watching them. Yes.
Well-placed bird feeder can be a great deal of entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You mentioned in your bio some rescue dogs. What sort have you?
I have a 60-pound Amstaff Lab Chow blend who looks like that, except she's sleeping, but she may wake up or not. Her nickname is Chunky Monkey Fat Pocket. And she's from South Carolina, and a small feral Sato from Puerto Rico, who despite 4 years of loving her, is still a pretty feral dog. I can pick her up, I can handle her, as can my husband, but she'd prefer there be no humans in the world. She loves dogs.
Yeah.
And she's a dog, and so that's her job, and I let her. How about you? Because you have pets. Yeah.
At the moment, two cats. They're year and a half old or almost 2 years old. We adopted them as kittens and made the wise decision to adopt two sisters. And they keep each other entertained as well as entertaining us. And then the other member of the four-legged household is an Irish wolfhound.
She
is number three of the five we have had. She's number three by means of being almost 11 years old, which just is seldom heard of in an Irish wolfhound. We lost one in August, age 10, one in October, age 10. And this one's making her way to 11 and still chugging along. So we've been quite blessed. All of them were either rescues or rehomes to us. We're active in the Irish Wolfhound community, and we're fortunate enough to have this one ceded to us as a puppy. She was 14 weeks old, and we've had her her entire life since then. One of our others was more or less feral. There was a breeder in Texas who had Irish Wolfhounds. He had been a veterinarian and looked after his own dogs, and his health suffered, and the dogs didn't get looked after. And when Houston SPCA finally got the call, there were 150 animals, 72 of which were Irish wolfhounds, which meant the call went out nationwide for wolfhound families, because not everybody wants a dog that a small one is 120 pounds. We were fortunate enough to get him, and he was pretty near feral. He really had no human contact prior to his rescue. And we watched him grow as a dog for the next 8 years. And he was still growing the last month we had him.
I do know that sadness. Yeah.
With an Irish wolfhound, you know it's coming.
Yeah. Actually, my husband really wanted a Great Dane when we got these two. Our last dog was a Belgian Malinois who was a former working dog who lost a leg. And her handler had died, so she was at the shelter. And I happened coincidentally to be driving past the shelter when she was in the exercise yard. And I pulled in and I went to meet her, and she loped over to me and stood up and put her one forepaw on my hip and her head on my stomach, and I went home with her. And she was remarkable. So I knew there would not be another one like her. So we got these two, and I love them. But they're more dogs than she was.
Yeah.
Before that, there were Dobermans and three at once, like you.
Yeah, there aren't enough hands when you have three Irish wolfhounds. Somebody's going to want attention, and you only have two hands.
I do have a question. Do you ever feel misunderstood by people on the other side?
Oh, absolutely. I don't get involved in conversations often enough that it is a personal thing. It's more like my stance is completely misunderstood. Where I lean politically, that tends to be more toward the conservative side of things. And so many folks don't seem to understand or not willing to articulate what my position might be to even begin to understand me. And that can often lead to dissatisfaction, I guess would be a good word, that people don't understand where I'm trying to come from. But again, the conversations where that comes up are very rare, because I don't talk politics with any regularity.
Can I ask you what conservative means to you? I mean, I have voted both sides of the aisle and worked on campaigns on both sides of the aisle. So I don't know. Yes, I would say I'm definitely socially very liberal.
I'm an advocate for smaller government and getting it out of our lives as much as possible.
I would say there are ways that I probably agree with that, and other ways when I wish if it's going to be there, that it would be much more effective. And that's after 25 years of working with trauma survivors. I would like the ways in which things are in our life to be way more effective than they are.
Yeah, when government goes out to fix something, it'd be nice if they actually did.
Yeah.
The problem I find with most in politics, and it doesn't matter which side of the political aisle, a problem is useful because it can get you reelected, but you must never, ever, if you're a politician, solve a problem, because then you have lost your means of getting elected and you have cut your own throat politically. So milking a problem is the nature of political beasts. And as far as I'm concerned, pretty much damn them all.
You know what I can't decide, and it could be my memory. I mean, I remember being frustrated as a young person, you know, struggling with politics. But particularly on the local level, it seemed easier because I met people and more got done on a local level. I mean, if the bridge has to get repaired, the bridge has to get repaired. The people who are going to vote you out of office are the people who have to drive the 30 miles out of the way because there's no bridge. But I don't remember as much, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember as much conversation about the other side or what's wrong as there is now. And that's exhausting for me.
I don't think we were as fractured 20, 30 years ago as we are now. Part of this I tend to blame on the internet and such, because you can have animosity there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hide. So you can do something nasty because it feels good to do it to somebody, calling them names or outing them for some behavior or something. And there's no repercussion to it because you can hide. In the day we grew up in, if you trash somebody, it could come back around. And it often did.
Well, particularly because the only way you could trash them was either to their face or to someone who knew both of you who would tell them. So your options were limited.
Yeah, anonymity just did not occur the way it does now.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think
with it goes a lot of cowardice. People will say things and try and hide from the fact that they said them, or do things to try and hide from it. They don't take responsibility for what they've said or done, and they don't care about people on the other side that they have said or done something to or about.
I think particularly when I look at young people's reliance on it, it frightens me. My granddaughter is 19 now. Her brother is 17, and then the two youngest are 6 and 4. They're not quite there yet, thank heaven. But for the two oldest ones, although their parents were pretty good about monitoring their use, when you talk to them, they don't have as broad a perspective as I would expect them to, given the family they come from and the neighborhood they live in. It seems like their thinking is pretty narrow. And maybe it's because I also don't remember what it was like to be 19, except in a very peripheral way. But I would agree with you. I do worry about that influence.
It may be that they are not party to conversations about topics such as we would have been, again, at the kitchen table. That was, our generation would do that. Everybody sat down to dinner. If there was some political issue, it might be discussed, or could be the football team or whatever, but family would have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody's nose was buried in their phone.
No, and even the pitch battles, I have to say, I mean, my parents did not fight. It's going to sound funny. They didn't fight on a personal level. But I remember, I think it was about 14 or 15, my father said at the dining room table, we're having a conversation about whether or not women should be doctors. And my father said, well, of course women can be doctors, but I wouldn't go to one. To which my mother replied, you would if you were dying. And which infuriated him. But it was that kind of, it was that level of, you know, it was Kennedy or Nixon. It was that, it wasn't like yelling and screaming and that, but there was a lot of, there was a lot of permission to say what we said. I mean, my mother didn't feel at all bad about saying that to my dad, nor did my dad feel bad about saying what he said to my mom. And I think that has shifted somewhat. I think people are more afraid to do that. And that makes me sad.
I have to agree, there's a lot of fear. I don't put political bumper stickers on my vehicle because I don't want somebody to come along and key it. Because that happens. The neighbors probably don't know where I fall politically because I don't put signs in the yard. My wife is a libertarian, so we occasionally will have a libertarian sign out in the front yard. I don't think anybody knows what that is, and I certainly don't think it offends anybody, so I don't feel like we're going to take retribution for it. But I'm concerned, somebody could, if they had a mind to, and I just feel people are mean enough these days, that somebody might hurt my dogs or something else to feel better about themselves. And
sorry.
I'm just saying that's something I'd rather not have to deal with. Somebody landed on the wrong side of me in that situation. It might be very unpleasant.
I was surprised. I've always, because I've worked for campaigns for so many years or for different things. I mean, not just campaigns, but a variety of things. And so I've always had signs in my yard, and I put signs up during the last election, and lots of people in the neighborhood did, and lots of them were different. And my dog still played with, somebody else's dog, and it seemed fine. And we said good morning. And then I was coming home. It was just on dark, and I was bringing the dogs into the house. And there's a couple who walks in the neighborhood, and she always walks behind him. She has a bad hip, I think, so she's a little slower. And she's always been friendly. We've always said hi. And he's hollering And so I just assumed he was talking to her because she was actually this time ahead of him instead of behind him. And as I sort of corralled the dogs in the front door, I realized he was hollering at me. And I was a little baffled. I'm standing on my front porch, my light is on. And I realized he was hollering about the sign. And, you know, I wasn't going to holler back, but it was so unnerving to me in my little neighborhood. I mean, this is, you know, it's Saratoga Springs is not a big city. I live in, we're not, you know, it's, we call it the city in the country, and calling it a city is probably, you know, Main Street is four blocks long. But it was interesting. We had a conversation with another couple who I know have different beliefs than I do, but who I really, really like. And they said, I told them what happened, and they said, they don't deliberately like you, don't put signs on the porch, because they've been, had people holler at them. And I thought, not my neighborhood. It made me sad.
Yeah. I am concerned in particular that it appears to me that one political side of the aisle has been given permission to act out, where the other side hasn't. And that's, they're not my side of the aisle. And so I moderate my behavior so that I don't get into a conflict. And I don't wish a conflict.
Yeah, I don't, you know, this is the first time. I grew up in a family with guns. I was the only one who really wanted to learn how to shoot, but I have the worst astigmatism in the world. And so, unless it's target practice, there's not a prayer. So, you know, I gave up probably about age 13 or 14. It was clear to my father that I was not going to be, you know, I was not going to be that girl. And my brother got pretty good. And my two sisters in between had no more interest in that than they had in anything other than nail polish. But I've never felt like I was in danger from one. I was embedded in our local police department for 5 years as part of my prior job. And I worked, you know, I did home visits to places where there were, you know, abusive partners after orders of protection, kind of scary places. And I never felt like I wanted to carry a gun because I always went with a policeman. But recently, I realized that I am more nervous about it. I don't really want to go to a big venue. I live near one of the most beautiful venues, you know, on the East Coast. It's kind of like Wolf Trap, only an even bigger park. It's a kind of more natural park. It's gorgeous. And I said to my husband, I don't think I want to go to this. Well, I'm not so worried about the symphony, but we used to go to concerts, and now I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I resent that. That's probably another reason to have this conversation. I resent feeling like that might be dangerous.
Yeah, the city of Richmond, which is nearby, I live in the county outside. There are two counties that kind of surround the city of Richmond. If you think of the city of Richmond as a bean, Henrico is north of it and Chesterfield is south of it. The division is the James River. Most places I go in Henrico, I don't feel any great concern for my personal safety. The minute I step over the line into Richmond, it's politically different. It's socially different, demographically different. It's not a place I'm overly comfortable in these days. And I've had my carry permit for about 15 years now. But I avoid the city of Richmond, and unfortunately, that's where our local symphony is. They also go through the political or the security theater of wanding everybody as you go into the symphony. It's like, yeah, this is not the bunch that needs the wand. It's the ones on the street who could use it. But
well, what's interesting to me is I think there's a younger component that scares me. I mean, I live in what was formerly an almost exclusively African-American neighborhood of homeowners and farmers who basically fed Saratoga for many years. And there's still members of that, of both families who live here, many of whom we know well. And we actually live very close to public housing, you know, kind of walk past it. None of that makes me nervous at all, but there's a younger component, because we've gotten to know people over the years. As I walk my dog, and they all have dogs, frankly, there isn't anybody I don't know at this point, but there's a younger component that does frighten me. And I'm not that old lady. I mean, I don't like to think of myself as that old lady, but I,
Ed, it's as we get a little older, we are a bit less capable, and I think that sometimes is a factor in how we feel about such things. In my youth, I wanted to be James Bond, so I did many things that he might have done. I was a scuba diver. I have 2 black belts. I've been into firearms my entire life. I started shooting at age 8. So as I have appreciated my condition as I get a bit older, I'm no longer the physically capable person I was in my 20s or 30s. I still have capabilities, but I have to recognize that some things change. And part of that is one of the reasons I often carry a firearm is it gives me options that I wouldn't have without it. And if I ever had to engage in combat with somebody involving a firearm, it's the worst day of my life. Yeah. But surviving the worst day of my life might be because I have a firearm.
When I lived in Santa Fe for about a year, and I was working for an FBO, a fixed base operation at the airport. And I lived out in the desert with my Doberman alone and in a little casita next to a large house that belonged to an attorney who lived in Albuquerque. So I was basically alone, me and the rattlers, which was fine. I loved it. There was nothing about it I didn't like. It was gorgeous. But the attorney that we had for the company I worked for, the first thing he said, we were setting up the books and doing the articles of incorporation, and he said, "Now, did you bring your gun?" When I moved there, and I said, "Well, I don't have one." He said, "Well, you cannot live out there without one." Okay. So he called his wife, who brought her collection. There was 5 or 6 in her gun case, and she brought them into the office, and he said, "Well, pick one." I'm like, "Okay." So I did, because, you know, I said, "I'm not sure that I'll ever use it." He said, I don't really care if you do or not, but I want you to have it in case you do. He said, "Not so much for the rattlers, because you can kind of shovel those off into the arroyo, but really, because that's the best way to move them." But but he said, "You're a woman living alone, basically on 50 undevelopable acres in the middle of the desert." And he said that it's, you know, with free-range cattle and free-range cattlemen. And he said, "You don't need it." Now, I never needed it, but it stayed under the seat of my car that whole time. And I don't know, honest to goodness, my eyesight is bad enough that unless somebody was close, I think it would have been useless. But I did understand what he was saying. I did. More than once, if I hadn't had the Doberman, I might have had, you know, a little bit of trouble. She was fearless and big. So she helped people think better, and I had the police offer to, you know, "Do you want me to give you a referral?" Whatever. I've always said no, but I do understand. I do understand responsible gun ownership. I just wish there was a way for them only to go to responsible people.
Unfortunately, people are people. I don't know a way to enforce that, much as we might wish. And magical thinking on the part of politicians or those who push politicians will never get us any closer to what we would like to see.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, let me see. What else? Your turn. You come up with a question.
What do you do as hobbies?
Ooh, Well, I'm a professional storyteller. So I'm actually one of three hosts. Cafe Lena is our local coffee house. It's, I think, the oldest running coffee house on the East Coast, certainly in this part of the world. So we host a monthly storytelling. I do storytelling as a fundraiser for a number of things. I have, you know, two hour and a half shows about animals. I've rescued their animals. I've worked at zoos. I've worked at animal rehab centers. I've worked at aquariums. I walk the dogs a lot. I have the birds. I read a lot. I'm not a knitter or a sewer or any of those things. I'm not good at any of that stuff. I'm more of an outdoor person. I have to say, I gardened assiduously and with my heart for many, 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 many years. And my back went out, but I persevered. And then I realized the little feral dog loves to run and she loves to dig. And it didn't seem worth the effort to corral her when she was so joyful. So I now do container gardening and it's very beautiful. I cook. I'm a great cook. I do cook well. And I love cooking. Yeah. My book club. Yeah. How about you?
Well, as I mentioned, firearms are a lifelong fascination for me. So there's that. I belong to an organization that teaches around the country. And so I am involved in teaching probably 25 or 30 days a year as a volunteer instructor, mostly rifle, although the organization also teaches pistol classes, and I'm certified to teach everything they do. Part of that also is storyteller, because the organization, while we teach marksmanship as our primary focus of skill, the main reason we are engaged in it is to try and wake people up to get back involved in their government. We try to remind them that we are a representative republic. And if the representatives don't know your feelings, they can never represent you. And it doesn't matter what side of the political aisle you're on, we try and avoid any taint as far as our thinking, although most of our folks would fall one side of the aisle more likely than the other. Waking people up and fighting apathy. And, you know, we remind them that if you're throwing a beer at the television because of something you see, you've accomplished nothing. But if you write a letter to your representative, there's a chance they'll do something. And if enough people get off their butts and write the letters and make the phone calls and send the emails, they will change and do our bidding. They think they can get away with it because nobody takes them to task. And we're not doing our job if we don't do that. They work for us. We're their employer. We have to make sure that our employees do what we want them to. And the system doesn't work if we're on our butts.
Yeah, it's easier to fire employees. But I would agree with you. I mean, I spend a lot of time writing letters and signing petitions and being a pain in the butt.
Yeah. The method by which we encourage such participation is telling the stories of the first day of the American Revolutionary War. So April 19th, 1775, and the events that led to it and the events that were caused by it, battles of Lexington and Concord, and the long fight of the British to try and get back to Boston after they stirred up the hornet's nest at Concord.
Lived in Boston went to school there, lived there for many years, have been to Concord, but yes.
It was quite a walk.
Yes. Can you imagine? Yeah.
I garden. Mostly my wife gardens and I provide the labor. But it's an enjoyable thing. I was talking with our facilitator earlier about the tree behind me here in the house. It's a ficus. And we've had this one about 35 years. It's not one of our oldest leafy children. I've got a rubber tree that I think is 50, and another ficus that my wife got during the time we were dating that was already a tree. So it was probably 5 or 7 years old when she got it. and it's still with us almost 40 years later. So I seem to not kill off plants. Something I inherited from my father, who maintained his own little greenhouse as his after work recreational activity.
Is that 5 minutes?
Yes.
Oh dear, I was just getting started. Don't.
What has most surprised you in our conversation?
Probably how much more alike we are than not. Although I'm not sure that actually surprised me, but I think I'm happy to have it affirmed.
I think that would be my viewpoint as well. I didn't have much doubt that we had more in common than not, even if we are on different sides of political issues or other things, that people are mostly people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When COVID first hit, my husband's office is about a mile from the house. So, and I had just retired. So I would walk him to the office with the dogs in the morning, walk home and go back and get him in the evening. And because everyone had a mask on, you couldn't see anybody smile. And everybody just looked dour. So we started to say good morning to everybody deliberately. Just, you know, and sort of do your best to smile with your eyes. and it was a very interesting time to see how many people responded. We often wondered, if we didn't have a mask on, if it wasn't COVID, would people have thought we were weird or whatever it was? But I think that's true. We ended up meeting people we might never have met otherwise. And doing something like this seems like such a benefit. Like, I have at least 6 friends who are going to call me tonight to find out what it was like. you know, and yeah.
My wife is waiting for my recommendation as to whether I think she should do this as well. And I'm certainly going to confirm that I believe she should. I think she'd get a charge out of it.
Yeah, I've had a number of friends ask me, and how about me? So I referred them to the website. And my husband, who's much more vehemently he's more vehemently political. I think our viewpoints are very similar, but he is, I think, less used to listening to the other side. I think would have a very hard time, and I think that's too bad, because I think it would be interesting if he did it. But
again, I see the great challenge is to truly understand somebody's side. You have to be able to articulate what they believe, and you really have to look for that to happen. I don't see an awful lot of it from some political persuasions. I see a bit more from others, but I think that's a point that all of us need to make. To truly manage understanding, you have to see where they're coming from and not just ridicule that or challenge it. You have to truly understand where they're coming from.
And I think what would be helpful is if people could articulate that, like the people who are having it could also articulate. There's something like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, there are some issues that will never be resolved, because even if you can articulate the opposing viewpoint, there's no, the viewpoints are far enough apart, there is no common ground between them. Abortion would be one example. Many people believe that it's taking a human life. Other people believe that it's not. It doesn't leave room for a middle ground. Unfortunately, it brings out some of the worst in both sides.
Yeah. And it leaves out all of the other possibilities for... there's this huge area in between there for any number of other ways to prevent pregnancy or do any number of other things that I think it's a red herring. I know that sounds funny, but I sometimes think there are some topics that are like red herrings, or like with the dog. You know, if I were waving a hamburger, and in some ways it feels like those very polarized things are that. And I feel like if you're paying attention to those, what are you not paying attention to?
What are they not telling us? What are they not showing us that we really should know it and should be paying attention to while they're doing whatever song and dance has got our attention?
I think there's a number of those things that everybody's going, look who's going to jump, and they're busy picking our pockets while we're in the crowd watching the jumper.
I could go on for a while, but Stephanie, are we done?
I know, I'm kind of watching Stephanie.